Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Surrounded by male voices day in and day out on his hugely popular morning ESPN radio show, Mike and Mike in the Morning, longtime sports anchor Mike Greenberg is perhaps the last person you would expect to write a 21st century epistolary novel centering on three women in various states of crisis. And that's before things get really serious. For Greenberg, the novel was a deeply personal project, confronting breast cancer in the aftermath of a close friend's 2009 death. But All You Could Ask For, out now from William Morrow, a HarperCollins imprint, is also wickedly funny, upending many of our modern American notions of social mobility, love, and happiness. Greenberg, also seen as a SportsCenter anchor, has spent more than a decade alongside co-host Mike Golic, but today he's playing hooky with us. Mike Greenberg, welcome to the Roundtable.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much for having me on.
How long did you have this first novel in you, and how much were you influenced by the events of your friend?
Well, I've had a first novel in me, I feel like, all of my life, but I certainly haven't had this one. My partner, Mike Golic, his wife, Chris, has an expression that she uses all the time where she says, sometimes you don't find the story finds you, and that's what happened here. I've always wanted to be a novelist. I've always wanted to write fiction. But in this case, as you alluded to in the introduction, our dear friend Heidi Armitage, I mean, she was one of my wife's best friends in the world, and our families were very close. We traveled together. Our kids were growing up together. 3 years ago, she was the healthiest, happiest, most delightful 43-year-old woman you ever met. And the next thing we knew, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, and 7 months later, she was gone. And it was just incredible. And by incredible, I mean it was overwhelming. I still, in some ways, haven't gotten past how unjust I found the whole thing. And anyway, during those 7 months, what I witnessed, I didn't go through Heidi's illness with her, but my wife did. My wife, Stacy, and two other women, our friends, Jane and Wendy, one of whom is Jane Green, who's a very well-known novelist and also a very close friend. The three of them, the way they rallied around Heidi was incredible. I don't even know how to put it into words. They were friends to her in a way that I don't have friends and that I've never seen. And it was that inspired the story. My story is not that. My novel is not about cancer. It's not about Heidi at all. It's not her story. It's about the power of friendship to elevate people through times of adversity. And that's what the three characters in my book do. And in conjunction with its release, my wife and I created a foundation. It's called Heidi's Angels. And we are donating 100% of the author's proceeds. So every penny that the book makes, we are going to donate to the V Foundation for cancer research in Heidi's name to combat breast cancer. And if you knew my friend Heidi, then you'd know it's the least we could do.
You know, it's funny, in the sports world where you reside most of the time, you know, everyone sees the pink sneakers, and after a while maybe starts to seem like it's just a rote example of people, you know, giving a nod to those who have fought cancer before, but you're really putting your money where your mouth is. What have you learned about this fight against breast cancer, having a close friend go through it and now with this foundation?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know that I've learned anything we didn't already know, which is that we've got to beat this darn thing. I mean, you know, I said to my kids before I left for my book tour, I'm going to be on the road now basically nonstop for 2 weeks. And I usually pick my kids up at school every day. So for me not to see my kids for 2 days is pretty unusual. But what I said to them was, you know, Dad's going to do something that matters here. I'm going to do something important. And I want my kids to live in a world. My kids are 12 and 10. And I want my kids to live in a world where someday they hear the following sentence. Oh, no, I have cancer. I'm going to be out of work for 2 weeks, man. I got to take this medicine, and this medicine is really heavy duty, and it makes you feel sick, and I'm going to be flat on my back for 2 weeks because I got this cancer. That's the world I want them to live in, and I genuinely believe that it is possible. And the V Foundation is one of the very best examples of ways that this can be done. It's them that are doing the work, not me. And the reason we're giving the money to them is they know who to give it to and I don't. So Heidi's Angels was just a way that we could keep Heidi's name involved. But the money's going to the V Foundation so they can give it to these brilliant scientists who are working in these laboratories at universities across the country, and one of them is going to figure out a way to cure this thing. So I don't know that I've learned anything that I didn't already know, but I know what the goal is, and you know, I hope that we're taking steps toward it.
Let's go to the actual process of writing. What was it like to get into the female voice, and there's three of them in this book, after spending so much time around, hey, Greenie, first time, long time kind of stuff?
You know, it was both easier than I thought it would be and impossible, which is to say, I could never have done it myself. So to get into the characters was not as hard as I thought it would be, because women are people. People are people. We're all kind of just people. And I think most of the big picture thoughts, the big picture emotions, the big picture fears, the big picture feelings that are in the book are universal. They're not male or female. It's in the little details that I had to get it right, and that I could never have done without help. So what I did was I put together a three-woman focus group. One of them is my wife, Stacy. One of them is my agent's wife, and then another one of them is our yoga instructor. So the three women of very different ages, and they're three really smart people. And what I did was, as I was writing, I would give it to them periodically, and I would have them give me notes on things that they felt didn't ring true, things they felt didn't feel authentic, things they just flat out felt sounded like something a man would write. And that was invaluable. I could never have done this without them. So the way I look at it, I sort of wrote it from a macro perspective, and then they helped me with the micro perspective. And my goal was that no one reading the book would ever have guessed that a man had written it had they not known it was me. And if I succeeded, then it is largely a credit to the three of them.
Talk to me about John Irving. You are a John Irving fan, as am I. I had just, the last book I think I read before this one, or maybe two ago, was The Hotel New Hampshire. I finally got around to it, and then it popped up in a moment in your own book. That was very exciting.
One of my favorite books.
Yeah. What kind of influence did he have on you, and why did you like him so much?
Oh, enormous. In 1993, I was flying from Providence, Rhode Island, to Phoenix, Arizona, where my brother went to college at Arizona State. And that's a long trip. And I needed a book, and I picked up a book, The World According to Garp, that I had never read, but I had heard it was a movie. I remember when it was a movie with Robin Williams, and I thought, oh, maybe this will be interesting. I didn't know anything about John Irving. By the time I landed in Phoenix, it had changed my life. I was so overwhelmed by that book, and it really made me feel, as I've said before, that I was either going to be a writer or I was going to be nothing at all. That was what inspired me to want to write, and I've since read every book he's ever written. I think I've read every word he's ever written. To me, he's the greatest novelist, American novelist of the second half of the 20th century, and an idol in every possible way. And so that would be my description of John Irving. And it's amazing because The World According to Garp was the one that sort of changed my perspective on life, but I wouldn't at this point even put it among my three favorite of his novels, and that's a pretty remarkable thing. If you look at the history of the great American novelists, I think if you're going to put A Prayer for Owen Meany, The Hotel New Hampshire, and The Cider House Rules, I would put those three against any three novels that any American author has ever written, and I'd say they would hold their own. So that's just a little taste of my thoughts. He's my favorite writer, and he always will be.
You know, I was thinking, reading The Hotel New Hampshire, that there's a PhD project in writing about the Irving confluence of events in the way that he masterfully makes a bunch of coincidences come to mean something huge in the novel. And your book gets to that point in a part one, part two switchover. Were you influenced structurally by Irving?
Probably subconsciously. I wasn't reading John Irving. I haven't read anything of his in a long time. Actually, in one person, I read this past year, but that was after I had finished writing All You Could Ask For. The structural inspiration for All You Could Ask For was actually a book called A Long Way Down by Nick Hornby. I don't know if you read that, but that's a terrific book, and it's about four people in London who meet on New Year's Eve at the top of a tower that is famous for being a place that people go to jump off of to commit suicide. And I don't know if this is a fictitious place or if it really exists, but it's in the book. And the four of them meet up there, and they decide together, rather than to jump off and commit suicide, to try and help each other through their struggles. And the story is an alternating first-person narration amongst all four of them. Two of them, by the way, are women. And it's brilliantly done. And that was the inspiration for how I wrote the book, both from the idea to do the female first-person voices and also the alternating narration. So I would say that book, really more than anything else, was the nuts and bolts inspiration for the way I wrote this.
Let me jump topics a little and ask you the following question. How do you keep your interest in the games on a day-to-day basis? Because as I've gotten a little bit older, this has happened where, you know, seasons turn into another season. Next thing you know, it's been 162 baseball games in the blink of an eye. And in your job, I mean, you have to be up on all this stuff. But clearly, you have these other interests. You're writing and you're doing SportsCenter one or two nights a week. You've got the show. I mean, how do you keep your enthusiasm for the sports end of it?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't have anywhere near the same interest in the games that I used to. I share your feeling, and I don't know if that's a function of getting older or if it's just a function of having covered sports for so many years and watched so many games. What I remain most interested in always are the people. I think there are a million great stories in sports, both wonderful ones and horrible ones. This week there have been quite a few horrible ones. But just this week alone, between Kevin Ware, the kid at Louisville, whose bone is sticking out of his leg, and then the officials, the referees in the Pac-12 conference, potentially conspiring against a coach out there of Arizona, Sean Miller, and then this coach of Rutgers basketball being physically and verbally abusive toward his players. Those stories I have not lost any interest in, nor the wonderful stories in sports. So to me, what has always appealed to me the most about sports are the people, the drama. Sports to me are the ultimate reality television. Reality TV is what sports would be if sports were concocted, if you made them up, if you just manufactured drama. Sports are real drama. They're real people who are brilliant at what they do, competing at the very highest level and caring more than you could ever imagine about the outcome. That's what reality television is. That's what we're trying to recreate. We're getting it every single night. So I haven't lost my interest in that part of it at all, and I think if I ever do, then I need to get out of this job. But I don't see why I would, because I find that every bit as fascinating as I did the day I started.
Do you have an idea for a second novel?
Well, actually, I've already almost finished my second novel. The way these things work, and I'm sort of new to this game, I finished All You Could Ask For and submitted it a year ago, January. So all through this time when we've been working up towards the launch, I've been writing my next novel, and it's almost done. Yes, I had this idea, and I plan to write more. My goal is to try and write a book a year, and I don't know if I'll be able to do that or not. But I really enjoy writing. I really enjoy the process. I get more of a feeling of satisfaction out of reading something that I wrote that I am proud of. I get more satisfaction out of that than I do anything professionally. So I have every intention of continuing to write well beyond this.
Do you worry at all about the reception end of it, that, you know, it's hard to be taken seriously as a novelist when people realize, oh, it's Mike from Mike and Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I don't worry about the reception from the standpoint that the reception has been so nice. I was worried at times, I will admit, over the last 10 or 12 months, there have been times that I woke up in kind of a cold sweat thinking, how are people going to react to this? But I must say that I've been so delighted. The reaction, both from inside ESPN and from outside, and, you know, in the world we live in today with Twitter, people can contact you immediately. The reaction has been so nice. And I think people have been, they've been so kind of touched by by the story, by why I'm doing this. And look, everyone wants to support cancer research. So the reception and the reaction have been exceptional. And I think people are looking past the idea that it might sound ridiculous that I wrote this novel. And then what I'm hopeful is that people will read it and then enjoy it on its own level, that the cause is wonderful, but hopefully they'll find that they enjoy the book as well. And maybe then they would be inclined to buy another book of mine sometime in the future. But that's obviously a concern for a much later time. Right now, all I'm really concerned with is trying to raise as much money as I can in memory of my friend. And then, you know, hope that I've created something that people will enjoy. And, you know, the reaction is really just starting to file in, but so far it's been really positive.
And from your radio partner, Mike Golic?
He's been great. You know, Golic has been great. You know, he has been really supportive of this from day one. His wife actually wrote a blurb for me. It's on the back cover of the book. I mean, she read it, and she really liked it, and she has promised me that someday she's going to read it to him. So at that point, he'll have some idea what it's about.
Mike Greenberg is the author of All You Could Ask For, out now from William Morrow. And it's been a real pleasure to speak with you, Mike. You can hear Mike on Mike and Mike in the Morning and catch him on SportsCenter. And good luck with this book, and come talk to us about the next one.
I will. Thank you very much for letting me come on and talk about this. I really appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.